Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we open our show with updates on several major wildfires in our region, including the Caesar Fire threatening homes in Ramona, as we tape our show on Monday afternoon. The Border 32 fire that destroyed homes and forced many evacuations in the Dulzura and Potrero areas and nearby areas, and the Willow fire that burned down a homeless encampment in Lakeside. The county is rolling out a new program to help farmers and ranchers gain access to care for their livestock and crops at risk during wildfires, once emergency responders deem it safe, and we'll have details on today's show on this program aimed at saving many animals' lives. Applications for commercial ranchers with cows and horses are already being accepted, and other animals will soon be added to the program. An extreme heat warning remains in effect for the rest of this week, along with a fire weather warning. So please, listeners, use caution and avoid any activities that could spark a fire, since the National Weather Service warns of explosive growth potential. Relief is at hand, though, with rain forecast potentially for the weekend. New COVID-19 boosters are available to target the most recent variants, and they're arriving in our region this week. Some pharmacies already have them in stock. Our newsmaker interview today is with Amy Reichart. She's a conservative candidate running against Chairman Nathan Fletcher on the County Board of Supervisors. Then on 2020 Talks, we'll have some national news headlines, including a report on unions this Labor Day, former President Donald Trump's claims that FBI photos of documents seized at his Mar-a-Lago estate are fake, the Veterans Administration gearing up to offer abortions in certain circumstances, and more. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. A wildfire has charred 50 acres in a blaze that started north of Highway 78 at Ramona Trails Drive in the Witch Creek area east of Ramona this afternoon, CAL FIRE reports. The Caesar Fire sparked evacuations due to structure threats, but forward spread has now been halted as of our show taping deadline. A temporary evacuation point is set up at Olive Pierce Middle School at 1521 Hanson Lane in Ramona. An animal evacuation shelter is open at the Ramona Rodeo Grounds at 421 Aqua Lane in Ramona. State Route 78 is closed in both directions from Magnolia Avenue to Sutherland Dam Road, and State Route 79 is also closed in the vicinity as firefighters put out hot spots. This information is current as of about 4 o'clock Monday afternoon, our show taping deadline. You can watch eastcountymagazine.org for updates and follow us on Twitter at East County Alert. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. The Border 32 fire scorched 4,456 acres and is 90% contained as of our show taping deadline Monday afternoon. The fast-moving fire in San Diego's East County caused hundreds of people to evacuate after it ignited on August 31st near Dulzura and Barrett Junction, scorching its way east through part of Potrero and also threatening Tecate. The fire shut down Highway 94 in both directions, along with the border crossing in Tecate. Four homes were destroyed, along with several outbuildings and a commercial structure. The cause of the fire remains under investigation. East County Magazine reporters Nadine Abbott and Josh Stotler were on the scene the first night of the fire, and both report seeing extreme fire behavior, as bad as any they've seen in their careers. Stotler has worked as a firefighter for multiple agencies and wound up coming to the aid of firefighters who had been dropped in by a CAL FIRE helicopter to fight the blaze. As flames encroached, the crew saw Stotler taking photos and asked him to stay close by, he says, since there were no other vehicles nearby. Conditions worsened and Stotler wound up giving a ride to help get the firefighting crew to safety. He then came across CAL FIRE engines battling the blaze just as the fire jumped across Highway 94, which he documented in a scary video. With fire burning in front and behind the vehicles, CAL FIRE crews managed to douse the inferno with water enough to clear a safe exit route for everyone. Firefighters managed to hold the fire overnight with no significant spread. Nadine Abbott, A former emergency responder went back the next day and found former inmate firefighters helping to fight the fire and douse hot spots. She also found SDG&E's new steel poles, though scorched, were still standing, helping to prevent potentially widespread power outages, with only a few homes losing power. Now, anyone who suffered damage in the Border 32 fire is encouraged to email recoverysandiego@sdcounty.ca.gov. Again, that's recoverysandiego@sdcounty.ca.gov to report damages and get information on possible assistance. If the damage is high enough, the county could seek a disaster declaration in an effort to obtain state or federal aid for fire victims. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Willow Fire burned 15 acres in Lakeside on August 31st. The fire began near Highway 67 and Mapleview Road in the late afternoon and caused some residents to evacuate. Although no houses or other buildings were lost or damaged, some homeless encampments were destroyed. A man who had been living in the riverbed where the fire swept through told East County Magazine that he was returning home when he saw smoke, but it was too late to save anything. He lost everything, including his tent, bicycle, which provided his only source of mobility, and even his clothes. It's been a tough summer for homeless people in Lakeside, where a homeless man was found dead in a pond, and a homeless woman was saved from a near drowning last month. The county is working on getting a homeless shelter in East County, but for these homeless individuals, the effort is too little too late. The incident commander at the Willow Fire, Battalion Chief Jordan with the Lakeside Fire Department, listed at least 14 fire departments that helped fight the fire using ground crews and air support. No injuries were incurred, and the cause remains under investigation. The chief stressed that with the hot weather, it's important to be alert to the fire danger and maintain defensible space for those who have homes. If you need to enter a burned area after a fire once access is permitted, consider wearing rubber boots and carry a jug of water to wash any contaminants off before entering your car. And please take care to avoid any activities that could spark a fire during these hot, tinder-dry conditions. Be safe. It's fire season. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
Tragic stories have emerged during local wildfires of livestock that perished not from flames, but from lack of food, water, or medical care. Farmers may also lose crops due to lack of irrigation. The situation has led some ranchers and farmers to risk their lives by not evacuating during wildfires, knowing that they would not be allowed back in to care for their animals or crops. That's about to change. Last Tuesday, county supervisors voted to approve issuing an agricultural pass, AG pass, that will allow a farmer or rancher limited access to their land in evacuated areas during emergencies to care for livestock or crops during emergencies, once emergency responders deem conditions safe. The program comes too late for those evacuated from the Border 32 fire that threatened Barrett Junction, Dulcura, Potrero, in Tecate last week. Some residents posted frantic messages on social media seeking help for animals trapped inside the evacuation area after volunteers with horse trailers were denied access and some horses died. The new program would not help volunteers gain entry, but would allow commercial ranchers and farmers or their managers who undergo safety training to be allowed limited access in future emergencies. The plan was proposed by East County Supervisors Joel Anderson and Jim Desmond. Supervisor Anderson says the AG passes will help eliminate the dilemma many farmers and ranchers must face during natural disasters, to leave behind their animals, putting their livestock and equine at risk, or to ignore evacuation orders, putting their own lives at risk. He adds, "This measure gives ranchers an opportunity for timely access to their ranches during what is an incredibly stressful and often life-or-death situation." And he voiced thanks to county staff for creating the program he hopes will save many lives. Supervisor Desmond notes that agriculture provides over 12,000 jobs and has an economic impact of just under $2 billion in San Diego County. He says, having this AG pass available to our farmers will allow for a better collaboration with firefighters and will ultimately make our community safer. The county begins accepting applications for commercial cattle and equine operations starting September 6th. The county will add AG passes for other commercial livestock and agricultural operations in fiscal year 2023-24. Tony Meacham, San Diego County Fire and CAL FIRE Chief, spoke at the supervisors' meeting to remind everyone with animals to have an evacuation plan before a wildfire occurs. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
New COVID-19 boosters that target recent variants arrived in our region this week and are already available in some locations. The new bivalent boosters were developed to generate an immune response from the original COVID-19 virus and also from the BA4 and BA5 Omicron subvariants. The Pfizer biotech is for everyone age 12 and over, while the Moderna bivalent booster is for those age 18 and up. Dr. Wilma Wooten, the county's public health officer, calls the new boosters a welcome resource, noting that the virus remains very prevalent in our community. San Diego County reported over 3,900 new cases and 8 deaths in the last week alone. Dr. Wooten adds, with this bivalent vaccine, we have an updated booster that more directly addresses the most commonly circulating variant and a chance to better protect our community. I encourage everyone eligible to get boosted. You can contact your healthcare provider or other vaccine provider, such as a pharmacy, for local availability. Availability at county vaccine events will be updated at coronavirus-sd.com, and you can get appointments through the state's MyTurn system. Initial supplies are expected to be limited. Similar to last year, the boosters will be offered along with the flu vaccine for those who want both. Vaccinations with the former booster have ended, as it is no longer authorized. The new booster will serve as the replacement. Among people age 50 and older, the odds of dying from COVID-19 are 96% higher among unvaccinated people than those who are vaccinated and boosted. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
An extreme heat warning remains in effect across San Diego County and neighboring Southern California counties. The sweltering heat wave, along with elevated fire conditions, will continue through the rest of this week, though relief is in sight with rain forecast for next weekend. But meanwhile, fire weather remains severe. According to the National Weather Service, there is the potential for large vertical plume growth with any new fires that develop, especially in the foothills and mountains. Hot weather with breezy afternoons could lead to easier fire starts and rapid growth of even more wildfires than we've already seen in the last few days. Thunderstorms are possible over inland mountains, valleys, and deserts, with potential for dry lightning strikes, which can also ignite fires. Gusty winds are forecast, which could cause fires to spread quickly. There is a very high risk of heat-related illness for those who are heat-sensitive or lack effective cooling or hydration. First responders treated many people over the weekend for heat exhaustion, including at the opening Aztecs game at the new Snapdragon Stadium and at San Diego Safari Park. The Cleveland National Forest has closed down trails to Cedar Creek Falls and Three Sisters Falls due to the extreme heat and fire danger. Overnight lows are only falling into the upper 70s to 80s. Even across coastal areas, a situation not apt to change with triple-digit high temperatures forecast to continue across the rest of the county, with deserts reaching as high as a sweltering 116 degrees. A statewide flex alert has been extended, with all Californians asked to reduce electricity usage to avoid power outages. Extreme heat waves and fire weather are becoming more common across the West, fueled by climate change. Avoid strenuous outdoor activities for you and your pets during the heat of the day. Keep hydrating by drinking a lot of water, and be sure to check on family and friends who may not have access to air conditioning. The county is operating cool zones at many local libraries and community centers, and you can find a list of those cool zones and locations and hours by Googling cool zones. If you need a ride to a county cool zone, you can get one by calling 211. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today, my very special guest is Amy Reichert. Amy is a candidate running for the 4th Supervisorial District seat, which is currently held by the board chairman, Nathan Fletcher. Amy is a licensed investigator and a pastor who founded Reopen San Diego. That's a nonprofit that fought against the shutdown of schools and businesses, as well as vaccine mandates. She's married with 2 sons, and she calls herself a mom on a mission. Her top issues include homelessness, cost of living, and crime. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam.
So can you start by telling us a little bit more about your background and qualifications and what makes you believe that you would be an effective supervisor?
I've lived here in San Diego County since I was 4 years old. In fact, I grew up in Tirsana. I graduated from San Diego State. I got my license as a private investigator back in the 90s, and I became licensed in 1999. Then in 2004, I started working at a church. So I went from being an investigator to a pastor, and I worked at Eastlake Church for 10 years. I oversaw 10 different ministries with 650 people. My favorite ministry was Celebrate Recovery, and I became a licensed pastor at that time. Then I had my now 11-year-old 3 weeks after I turned 43,
wow.
And I decided, you know what, I need to be home on the weekends with my family. I also have an older son who just turned 23 and graduated from San Diego State. So fast forward to 2020, he was 9 years old, and that's when the world shut down and school shut down, and I got together with a group of other moms, and we formed this little grassroots group called Reopen San Diego, and that's when we started advocating for the safe reopening of schools and the safe reopening of small businesses.
Yeah, over 5,000 San Diegans have died of COVID. And of course, you know, the mandates were put in place to protect the public health, but they did come at a cost to those who were impacted. Can you explain to listeners why you think supervisors were wrong to, you know, to do these shutdowns, basically prioritizing public health over the business and educational needs?
Well, when it came to the shutdowns, I noticed that when it came to governments, not only locally, at the state level, federally, and around the world, they seem to do a pick and choose thing on who should be open and who should be closed. So, for example, here in San Diego, marijuana dispensaries were allowed to be open.
Yeah.
Liquor stores were allowed to be open. Walmart, Target, Costco, all allowed to be open. And then small businesses were considered non-essential. And so we had a very nuanced opinion about how to handle closures from the very beginning. We never took an extreme stance. We knew COVID was real, but we also had the position that, you know what? Rather than shutting down 100% of society, we should shift and protect the most vulnerable, the 10% in our society who is most hit by this. And right now we know from looking at the numbers, we've known this actually for a while, that 80% of the people who died with COVID were obese. We know that the people that were most likely to pass away, sadly, from COVID, the average age in San Diego was 76 years old, so which is very close to the average lifespan of the average American. And so I feel that we really failed the most vulnerable. And sure enough, we lost 5,000 people, and I think we could have done a better job.
Fortunately, we now have vaccines and better treatments also. So as we're coming out of the pandemic, there's a lot of other issues to focus on right now. San Diego County has over 8,000 homeless people as of the last annual point-in-time count done in January. The current board has taken some actions that prior boards wouldn't do, such as approving building more shelters and adding safe parking for people living in vehicles. So, Amy, I know you've said homelessness is a priority, which is great. What more would you do if elected to address the homelessness problem that isn't already in the works? And do you agree, I should ask, with the things that have been done so far, or would you take a different approach?
Well, You're going to hear some things from me that are going to be a little bit different. But as I've learned in the past couple of years, it's more important than ever to say the kind of things that people are afraid to say, but they are thinking. And so let's take a look at the homelessness issue. In the past couple of years alone, countywide, the numbers have actually increased by 10%.
True.
So I speak with a lot of first responders that are out there, and homelessness is a huge umbrella term, but it definitely has different segments
right.
of the population within that. Right now, I'm really glad that countywide, we have what's called the homeless outreach teams. This is law enforcement, but it's also mental health care providers, behavioral health, and social workers mm-hmm. that are making contact with the homeless population. There's domestic violence victims through no fault of their own find themselves on the street. So I'm glad that more contact is being made so that they can get in a shelter as soon as possible. There's kids that were in foster care situations. They've been termed out. And now they're homeless.
Yeah.
Getting help for them is crucial. But there is a segment of the homeless population that not only struggles with mental health issues, but also drug addicted.
Yeah.
And so it's not an either or. Many of our people that are mentally ill struggle with mental health. They also are abusing substances to cope with their mental illness. Let's be really honest about where we are. The state, our county government, has spent more than ever on the homelessness issue for it to only get worse. So I go back to those law enforcement and I say, what is your opinion? And I spoke to one San Diego police officer. He's been on the force for 25 years. And he said,
I was going to ask what he said, but go ahead.
Oh, yes. Okay. So, 25-year veteran, San Diego Police Department. In fact, I'll be doing a video about this and he'll be doing a voiceover. But here's what he said. He said in 2014 is really when things got worse for homelessness in California. And that's when Prop 47 decriminalized a lot of activity. And so as our jails got emptied, what happened was there were people who were released from our jails and prisons who found themselves homeless. The other thing that he found that is just a very sad reality is that he would go as an officer to the Greyhound station in downtown San Diego, and coming off the bus would be people who were clearly homeless from another state. And they would ask them, you know, why are you coming here? And they're like, well, we heard that you could come here, get a free phone and get free food.
It's a small percentage, I think, when they've done the surveys. There's a little of that, but at least something like 80% or more are people who were from our area before they became homeless. But you're right. It's a complex problem, and you can't just have – there's no one-size-fits-all answer to it. We have to look at each reason why someone's homeless and a different solution. And the crime thing is interesting, too. A lot of that, listeners, stemmed from when there was a court decision that the state's jails were too crowded and they were in inhumane conditions. So they basically ordered the state to release some prisoners, and they sent some of them to the county jails, which also had too many. So they wound up releasing some of the ones, mostly the less violent, who were close to being released anyway. But still, so it's like this bump in the python. I keep asking the officers, is it always going to be this way? And they kind of hope not. But, you know, maybe it's just that swell of people that were briefly, had to be let go. Some of whom reoffend and wind up back in there. But it is an issue. Everybody I talk to, you know, a lot of people are concerned about, you call the police and it takes a long time for them to get there.
Absolutely. And so let's talk about that. So in the past year alone, according to the County of San Diego, violent crime has increased by 14%. I think we have to look at causation here. We understand that the jails were overcrowded and the prisons were overcrowded, but the effect is that we're seeing an increase in violent crime, not just crime, and that is up as well. And again, I go back to police officers who've been on the force and asking them the tough questions. And one of the things they're telling me at San Diego Police Department is they are short-staffed by 250 officers. Our San Diego Sheriff's Department is currently understaffed by 240 officers. Then when they do do an arrest and write up a report and they submit it, they're finding, going back to that 2014 Proposition 47, they're finding that they do all this work and all this investigation so that the DA's office can prosecute it. And they're like, our hands are tied because of this new proposition. We can't possibly prosecute this. This is not a felony anymore. This is a misdemeanor, and they're deciding.
What can supervisors do about it? Because some of this stems with problems that are, you know, coming from the state. What can supervisors do to reduce crime?
Yes, thank you for asking me that. Well, I think for one, we need to stand up to the state of California. Instead of just nodding everything that the state does, we have to take back local control. And we have to say, hey, state of California, this isn't working. And when it comes to our law enforcement crisis right now with the departments being short-staffed, that has to be addressed right away.
Yeah.
That is something that the County Board of Supervisors can do.
Okay. Amy, you mentioned foster children. Each year, we have more than 1,200 children entering the foster care system in San Diego County, which has about 3,400 kids in foster care on average every single year. It's an awful lot. I know that you yourself were adopted, and you've talked about losing a child that was, you know, sadly born in a coma. As somebody who's experienced, you know, that kind of heartbreak, what would you do to improve the region's foster care system, or more broadly, you know, the lives of children in general in our region?
It is a sad tragedy. And one of the very first things that, one of the very first meetings I had when I decided to jump into the race, I met with Shane Harris, who is an activist here and a former foster child himself.
He is.
And he was able to share with me his own experience in our foster care system and his frustration that the county originally was going to shut down a very successful program, San Pasqual Academy.
Right.
And there was such an outcry from former foster kids who loved that program, who found hope and healing there. So as a supervisor, I would absolutely take a hard look at our foster care system and encourage more programs and expansion of successful ones like San Pasqual Academy.
Okay, very good. Climate change is an issue that California and the current board leadership have made a priority to address, along with protecting, you know, air and water quality, which sometimes goes hand in hand with air pollution.
Mm-hmm.
Although how to achieve those goals has sometimes caused controversy, especially here. Do you think these are important issues? And if so, what steps would you support to reduce carbon emissions in our region while minimizing the impacts, especially on folks out in the rural areas that maybe, you know, don't have access to the mass transit that the people who may live in the urban areas have?
Such a great question. I am very concerned about our environment. Sadly, with the whole mudslinging and name-calling, someone called me a climate change denier, which is the farthest thing from the truth. My son, who's 23 and he graduated from San Diego State University, got his degree in environmental science.
Oh, very good.
And that's because
my original degree was in environmental studies way back when, with the early climate change scientists, you know, predicting all this stuff that we're seeing here decades later. But well, that's interesting to hear, Amy. So if we agree it's a problem and it should be addressed, I guess it comes down to what is our role as a county, and how do we do this? And at the same time, you know, deal with concerns of people who maybe, you know, can't yet afford, you know, say to pay a gas tax if they're stuck having to commute from Campo or something like that. What are the positive things that could be done to address climate change, you know, and at the same time, make sure that any impacts of it are shared among everybody, not just overburdening folks in one part of the county over another?
I am so glad you said that. And I think that this kind of conversation is so crucial, because I think what we'll find is, even if people are on different political sides of the aisle, we can actually agree on certain things. We may just have different approaches on how to handle it.
Right. So we look at the fires, like the one that's burning as we do this interview, 4,200 acres out there. And You know, you ask every fire chief, I don't care what their politics are, every one of them will say climate change is real, it's hotter, it's drier, fire season is year round, it never used to be this way before. You know, we can see that. We can see the glaciers melting around the world. So hopefully we're moving past the, is climate change real? And now it's the, okay, we're stuck with it. What do we do about it?
Absolutely. And so you brought up something really interesting. You brought up the vehicle mileage tax. And that is something that SANDAG actually wants to do in San Diego County. And it would result in a tax on every single San Diego County driver, anywhere from 2 to 4 cents a mile. And that would result in the average San Diegan having to pay anywhere from $500 to $900 extra a year. And I don't know about you, Miriam, I don't have an extra $500 to $900 a year.
A lot of people don't, yeah.
Cost of living is already skyrocketing high here in San Diego. We have the highest water rates in the country, some of the highest energy rates. So how can we encourage people to use public transportation? We have to modernize it. I ask this question all the time. People say, you know what, we should invest, or we should have public transportation. And the first question I ask them is, do you use public transportation? And they're like, well, no. Well, to go to the Padres game, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. So they are pro public transportation. So then I ask a little bit further, well, what would it take for you to use public transportation more? Mm-hmm. And they're like, it just takes too long. Oh. So I live in La Mesa. You know, if the job centers are in downtown San Diego, Sereno Valley, well, you know, there's no trolley necessarily from my house.
Or the high-speed trains. You know, we hear a lot of poo-pooing of the high-speed train idea, but in Europe, you know, people get around on these trains that go, you know, I don't know what it is, 80 miles an hour, 200 miles an hour, whatever it is, you know, you can get from town to town really, really, really fast. So there are thinking outside the box ideas. Some of them are expensive, but I think, you know, you're onto something. It can't just be a, let's just stick it to the people that happen to live in rural areas. Let's find other ways to, and what about a carrot? Instead of a stick approach, a carrot approach, maybe some incentives if you do go buy an electric car or you build on transit line or something.
I am concerned about electric cars. I'm concerned that they aren't necessarily a silver bullet because they still need energy.
True.
To operate. And, you know, right now, it's hot right now.
I'll say. I'll
and, right? It's going to be like 100 degrees today. And we've already gotten warnings from the governor that we need to preserve. And so the announcement went out, hey, if you have an electric car, please don't charge your car between the hours of 7 to 2 p.m. Well, that's like saying, hey, don't go to the gas station between the hours of 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. So electric cars run on actual energy, right? And it's not all clean energy. Also concerned about the batteries. Batteries are highly toxic that run these. So I believe, I have hope that our electric cars are going to be so much different, so much better for the environment 10 years from now. I believe we will get there. Mm-hmm. But the cost of an electric car right now is so far out of reach for the average San Diegan. I can't afford one. I don't have $67,000 for an electric car.
Right.
So
what can we do? What can we do? We've talked a lot about the things that there's problems with. This is one of these difficult issues, you know, it's like homelessness. But what can we do to try to incentivize folks to, you know, to use less fossil fuels?
I think that's a tough one. I'm because on one hand, you see SANDAG saying we're going to do this vehicle mileage tax and assess people per mile. That's obviously going to discourage driving, number one, but it's only going to discourage driving for a certain segment of the population. Because if you live in La Jolla or Carmel Valley, it's $900 extra a year. That's fine.
Right. But for some, they don't have a choice if you're, So it's a thorny issue.
I do have some interesting solutions, some ideas. I'm just going to put this out there.
Okay.
So many years ago, I went to South America. I was in Peru and they had these smaller buses called combis.
Ah.
And I am wondering if we can do something have smaller buses that are more maneuverable that can weave into a neighborhood like mine. Because let's face it, if I'm going to walk to the bus stop to commute every day, first of all, I want it to be safe as a woman.
Right.
If I'm coming home late at night, I don't from a job, I don't want to be walking at 9 p.m. at night from a bus stop to my home. So combis, let me get back to that. So we all know about Uber and Lyft. What if there was some way that the county, and this is just a completely novel idea that I came up on my own. So it would be an app service where people could actually get picked up, much like a shuttle. So yes, there would be more stops because the shuttle would be picking up people.
I like
but it.
It
would go to certain destinations.
Yeah.
And it would be more of a direct route. So I would love to see a solution like that for public transportation.
Good idea. Yeah, good idea. It could at least take people to maybe the most common destinations like colleges or a trolley stop or shopping centers or something like that, or those kind of things. That's an interesting idea. I'd love to hear more about that. We mentioned the high cost of living. I think probably top of that list is the high cost of housing and rent. We're now the highest in the nation to buy a house, one of the highest, you know, for rent, which obviously contributes to the homeless problem. That's one of the issues, one of the factors there, as well as people just moving out of the area because they can't afford entry-level housing. So what ideas do you have to try to reduce that cost of living, and especially to make housing more affordable, both for people that want to buy and people that want to rent?
Well, so I want to start off by saying that, first of all, the biggest problem that we face right here in San Diego County is, and the most wonderful problem is, everybody wants to live here. If you took a survey of the 7 billion people on this earth and you said, if you could live anywhere else besides your home country, where would you want to live? I bet you a lot of people would say California.
Yeah,
specifically Southern California. Mm-hmm. And as you know, we have a limited housing supply. And so that drives the price up. But there's other factors too, which are keeping that housing supply small. And again, these were noble reasons why the state did this for the environment.
Right.
But basically what has happened is because of the current laws from the state of California, there is basically a moratorium on any kind of growth of single family homes in San Diego County, because what they look is at vehicle miles traveled. So let's say a developer up in San Marcos wants to build. Well, the state says vehicle miles traveled. Well, these homes that you're going to build, these people are most likely going to work in downtown San Diego, and this is going to be the adverse impact on the environment. And so what the what they're finding is either their projects are not being approved, or there's such incredible barriers for there to be an offset to the environment. It's just, it's impossible to build. The other thing that's happening, and you mentioned it earlier, Miriam, is we're seeing so many people leave the state of California. When I'm at an event, one of the things I'll ask people, raise your hand if one of your family members or a friend has left the state. And almost the entire room raises their hand. And I know from talking to people, they're looking for more affordable housing. So the affordable housing that is being built right now in San Diego County, okay, I'll just be really honest. This is not the kind of housing that people are looking for when they're going to move to a state like Texas. They're looking for a home, a single family home.
They don't want to be up on the sixth story of a high rise or something necessarily.
Next to a trolley track.
Yeah, apparently. I agree with you on that one. I don't know how we make the single family homes more affordable, but I agree that especially people that are ready to start a family or already have one, that's what they want. They want the house and the yard, and it's kind of a vanishing species right now, I think.
We have to work on solutions where we can build with moderation, with consideration and care for the environment, but not to the impact where there's an actual moratorium in place.
Yeah. Supervisors whose districts include East County, that includes Joel Anderson and even Nathan Fletcher and former supervisor Diane Jacob, they've all advocated for expanding access to our parks and our recreational opportunities in East County. We're kind of the playground for San Diego out here, other than the beach. including Nathan Lead launched this new Experience the Outdoors program to get folks out, you know, enjoying our parks. Are those goals that you support as well?
Oh, absolutely. Oh my gosh. As someone who has, sorry, there goes my phone. I apologize for that, Miriam. Okay.
Mine could maybe the same.
Okay. So, oh, absolutely. I love the outdoors so much. And that's why, like, I'm just going to go back to the lockdowns when everything was shut down here. I live about a mile from Lake Murray. And sadly, there were barriers there. Also, we couldn't go to the beach either. So I'm an absolute advocate for the outdoors. People, not only it helps people get physically in shape, mm-hmm. but emotionally too, for people to connect with nature. And in San Diego County, like I said, we're just like the luckiest people in the world because we live in the most beautiful place. So yeah, I'm happy that we can support programs like that.
Yeah, it was an interesting kind of side effect of the pandemic, I think, that a lot of people really never got out into the outdoors much. I've talked to so many people who suddenly discovered it. You know, you're kind of locked down, but you're allowed to go out for exercising and fresh air. So they would suddenly discover these parks and lakes and, you know, get out there into the outdoors and develop an appreciation for it.
I lost 50 pounds in 2020.
Good for you.
It was a huge wake-up call. I saw the numbers. I'm like, okay, 80% of the people who are sadly passing away with COVID are overweight. And true. I was at the point in my life. I also had high blood pressure too.
Wow.
And so So I'm good outdoors now more than ever. I walk 3 miles a day.
Excellent.
Right over there by Lake Murray, in fact.
Nice. And I grew up over there. It's a great area for walking.
It's wonderful. I love it here.
Yeah. The current Board of Supervisors has 3 Democrats and 2 Republicans. You're a Republican, I believe, and so that could potentially change the balance here. But despite the, you know, pretty even split there, they've managed to actually vote in a bipartisan manner about 95% of the time, which is completely different than, say, Congress or the state legislature, for that matter. I'm curious what areas there are, if any, where you think you're most likely to find common ground to work across the aisle, or if there's any others where you would just sort of draw the line and say, you know, no, we're going to take a more partisan stance on this one.
Thank you for asking that. So this is a nonpartisan office. I am a registered Republican. I've been endorsed by the San Diego Republican Party, and I've also been endorsed by the Libertarian Party of San Diego.
Interesting.
So I have bipartisan support, which is really cool. So there have been times where it's a little bit more contentious at the board, and mm-hmm. it seems like on those more partisan issues, it always comes down 3-2. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to bring up a controversial topic. And again, I have to speak my mind. When it comes to me as a woman, I have fought so hard in my life for women's rights. Mm. And one of the things that gave me a great outlet as a teenager, growing up in a home with a father in a wheelchair, was that I played sports. I played varsity soccer, and I ran cross country, and I ran track. And this past year, the County Board of Supervisors, I feel, took a partisan issue, made it into a resolution, and turned it into an ordinance. And what it was it redefined the definition of a biological woman.
Mm.
And as someone, again, I have fought so hard to get where I've gotten as a woman. And again, I'm just going to say this, and I'm not going to be afraid to say it, because I think a lot of people have been silenced because they're just going to be name called. Women's sports needs to be protected. Biological girls should be competing against other biological girls. And when it comes to safe spaces for women, like our locker rooms and in high school and our locker rooms at gyms, I don't want to share those safe spaces for biologically intact men. And currently, this ordinance recognizes that even if a man is biologically intact, just because he has the thought that he is another gender, that he can go into these spaces and that he can compete against mm-hmm. a woman. Now, how does this affect the county? Well, I used to work at juvenile hall. I worked with girls and I worked with boys. And I can tell you that if it ever comes to the point where the county allows biological males to be housed in our juvenile hall, in our jails with biological women, I am very, very, very concerned that there will be many women who will be victims of rape.
Okay.
And so I am, I know this is very controversial topic, but
it is.
I feel that the County Board of Supervisors took a political issue, a national issue, and instead of focusing on, it didn't seem like that ordinance came about organically. It seemed like it came from somewhere else. I give you my word that I would not be partisan and I wouldn't bring partisan issues to the County Board of Supervisors. And I would work very hard to reach across the aisle to people who have different political beliefs than me and have a conversation. And certainly not do what my opponent has done, which is if you disagree with him, he will name call you and shame you. Let me give you, for example, this week on social media, Nathan Fletcher said that Republicans are part of a deranged cult and they are following a tyrannical fascist leader. I found that to be highly divisive and uncalled for a man in his position and a leader to say something like that. I wouldn't do that.
Amy, if people want to learn more about you and your candidacy, do you have a website? Where could they find out more?
Thank you so much, Miriam, and thank you for a wonderful interview.
Welcome.
My website is amyforsandiego.com. That's amyforsandiego.com.
Okay.
You can send me a message there too.
I should. Hey, I want to throw in one other question because you mentioned women's rights and not bringing up partisan issues, but the abortion and birth control have been so much in the news now because of the Supreme Court decision and many, many states that are taking action to take away those rights or restrict them. California has kind of gone the opposite, but we are seeing around the country some counties that are trying to take stances on that as well. What are your views on that particular issue for those that might be concerned that, you know, if a board were to flip, we could see efforts to somehow restrict that or not protect those rights, which, and understanding this is a very controversial issue. And
thank you for asking me that. So the county did actually do a reproductive rights resolution last year, an ordinance that passed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, as you know, in November, voters will get a chance to vote on Proposition 1, which will be about abortion and including it in the California Constitution.
Right.
I believe Proposition 1 will pass and it will be codified in the California Constitution. Let me explain to you why I am against Proposition 1, though.
Okay.
I am against Proposition 1 because it doesn't just protect abortion rights, it expands it. So currently, under the current definition of when it is okay to have an illegal abortion in the state of California, all rested on viability. Right. So if a baby was 24 weeks, well, then it was viable outside of the womb.
Right.
And therefore, it was safe from being aborted.
Right.
It was not legal to abort that 24 weeks.
Well, I think absent if, say, a mother's life was at stake.
Oh,
or,
sure.
Or
absolutely.
Baby was found to have no brain stem or something. Yeah.
Oh, yes. 100%.
Right. But healthy baby, healthy mother. Yeah. Is
yes.
Different
yes.
situation.
Oh, absolutely. So what happens is in Proposition 1, it expands the definition of abortion and also expands abortion rights rather than just protecting them.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, if Proposition 1 passes, then a baby would be eligible to be aborted the day before it's born.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally am against that. Here's why. Because the abortion would actually involve killing that child. So if a child is about to be born, that child being taken out of its mother womb is viable and would survive. And so if it is aborted the day before, it would actually involve the additional act of murdering that child. So I am against Proposition 1 and the going beyond what's viable.
All right. Well, I appreciate you sharing your views on that, Amy. It's a very, I think, thorny issue for many, many people. Listeners, if you just tuned in, we are speaking with Amy Reichart, the candidate who's running for San Diego County's 4th Supervisorial District, which is currently represented by Chairman Nathan Fletcher. We will be reaching out, of course, because we're nonpartisan public interest journalism. We are reaching out to Chairman Fletcher and inviting him on for an interview on a future date as well. Amy, I'm going to let you have the last word here today. What else would you like our audience to know about you and your candidacy for a supervisor?
I have to say that it's been amazing the past 6 months, just how the community has responded. I've knocked on over 1,000 doors, and the response that I get is, wow, nobody, you know, no politician has ever knocked on my door before. And for that reason alone, I'm voting for you, Amy. And so one of the things that just is part of my heart is I want to lead with a listening ear, and I want to lead with hope and not fear. And I think that's where we need to go right now. Now that we have we're in the endemic stage right now of COVID, we need to move past it, and we need to move on with hope, and we need to take care of our kids who were harmed as a result of the lockdowns, as we're seeing. And so that's going to be one of my biggest tasks is mental health issues, but also cost of living, crime, and homelessness. Miriam, thank you so much for having me today.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you, Amy, for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
For every story you hear about working people organizing and joining together to form unions at Amazon or Starbucks, there are 6 or 7 or more stories in other industries.
AFL-CIO President Liz Schuler says unions are on the rise across the U.S. this Labor Day. According to the National Labor Relations Board, the number of union elections is up nearly 60% over last year. Former President Donald Trump says the picture of classified documents found at his Mar-a-Lago residence is fake news.
They talk about documents not being properly stored, yet they go in and take documents, dump them on the floor, stage a photo shoot, and pretend that I had done it, like I had put them all over the floor.
Trump spoke at a campaign rally for Pennsylvania Republican Senate candidate Dr. Mehmet Oz. Democrats describe it as a standard police evidence photo and point out Trump has not explained why he had the papers at his Florida home. In Italy over the weekend, Republican South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham defended his recent warning of riots in the streets if former President Trump is prosecuted for his mishandling classified materials.
The tactics used by the FBI to investigate Trump were such that they wanted to get him and they ignored all the stop signs.
Canadian authorities say they remain on the hunt for 2 armed and dangerous suspects after a stabbing spree Sunday in an Indigenous community. At least 10 people are dead. Rhonda Blackmore with the Saskatchewan Police says the number of injured could be much higher.
Several additional victims have been injured, 15 of which at this point have been transported to various hospitals. There may be additional injured victims who transported themselves to various hospitals.
The Department of Veterans Affairs says it will start providing abortions in certain circumstances, even in states where it's illegal or restricted. Under a new rule, pregnant veterans and VA beneficiaries will be able to get abortions if their life or health would be in danger if the pregnancy went to term. The German government announced a new $65 billion aid plan to combat skyrocketing energy costs and inflation on Sunday. Prices continue to rise across Europe, driven in part by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Private information involving 120,000 taxpayers, many of whom had filed a business return used by tax-exempt organizations, was made public on the IRS's website by accident, the agency said. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
As kids head back to school in California, experts say it's important to bring them in for a physical and get their hearing, vision, and teeth checked as well. A study from the Urban Institute found almost 1 in 5 parents delayed or skipped their kids' preventive visits during the pandemic, so now is the time to catch up. Dr. Aaron Shaw, a pediatric dentist in the Bay Area, says dental problems are linked to absenteeism.
Kids with dental problems are 3 times more likely to miss school than their peers without dental problems. And last time they tallied the amount of missed school hours, they tallied more than 51 million school hours lost to dental-related illness for school-aged children each year.
The American Optometric Association recommends children get their first comprehensive eye exam before their first birthday, again right before kindergarten, and if no issues are detected, every 2 years after that. Experts also say kids should keep their device screens at least 30 inches away and advise taking a break from the screen every 20 minutes to train their eyes on something at least 20 feet away. Dr. Donna O'Shea, National Chief Medical Officer with UnitedHealthcare, points out that regular hearing tests are also a must.
Like vision and dental, early detection of hearing issues is crucial for getting treatment as soon as possible. And that's really important because hearing loss can affect a child's ability to develop speech, language, and social skills.
O'Shea recommends young people follow the 60-60 rule, which means only using earbuds or headphones for less than 60 minutes at no more than 60% of the player's maximum volume. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
If you're looking for work, the city of Lemon Grove has jobs. They sent a tweet out August 25th that says, looking for a few talented professionals to join our team. The jobs currently available include fire inspector, maintenance service worker, public works operations, and administration manager, as well as senior management analyst. For details and job descriptions, as well as deadlines, you can go to lemongrove.ca.gov. Click on City Hall and Human Resources. Reporting for East County Magazine from Lemon Grove, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, AK Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.